Okay, I want to share with you a piece of Torah on Parshas Pinchas that was shared in Keli Masmidim two summers ago, maybe three summers ago. Rav Daniel Stein came on a Friday morning and he shared that. Right? Was it? Wasn't? Did Rav Stein come last summer? He did come last summer. Yeah. Okay, but I don't think this was his piece of Torah from last summer. I think this piece of Torah was from a few summers ago. One of the differences between a passing fad and a genuine movement is it could be summarized in a single word, and that is succession. Meaning, when you have a major leader, someone who makes a major impact, he can inspire people of his generation, people who see him and who have access to him, but nobody will think about him after he's gone unless there are other leaders carrying on the legacy that that person had built. Meaning, you think about Gedolei Torah even, because other than those who have written monumental works, like Rav Moshe Feinstein, even without a Rav David, although Rav David helped cement his legacy also, but even without a of David, just on account of the Igros Moshe, would probably be known for all times. But like Rav Soloveitchik, his writings probably would not have given him the same influence as his Talmidim do, as the fact that he produced the Rav Lichtenstein, he produced the Rav Schachter. The idea of succession, of having someone who can take over, who can carry the torch, who can carry that message forward. And from that perspective, one of the most important conversations in the entirety of Jewish history happens in this week's parsha. There are so many parshas in the Torah that begin with Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Lemor, and this one is reversed. Vayidaber Moshe el Hashem Lemor. Moshe Rabbeinu begs Hashem for his life's message and his impact not to be lost on his own passing when he dies, because they need to have an ish al ha'eda asher yetzei lifneihem v'asher yavo lifneihem. There needs to be someone who's going to take over that mantle of leadership. The people cannot be katzon asher ein lahem roeh, Moshe Rabbeinu argues, and Hashem immediately agrees as absolutely right, and he instructs Moshe Rabbeinu to take Yehoshua v'samachta es yadcha alav, and you should put your hand on him, thereby giving mehodcha alav. Give your glory, give your splendor to him. And the Torah tells us that Moshe obliged exactly ka'asher tziva Hashem oso, exactly what Hashem told him, vayismoch es yadav alav. And he leaned his hands on Yehoshua. Sounds great, sounds perfect. The problem is that if you look closely, Moshe did not do exactly as Hashem had commanded. Hashem told him to place yadcha alav, not yadecha, yadcha. Yadcha means a single hand on Yehoshua. And Moshe placed yadav, not yado, yadav. He placed both of his hands on Yehoshua. And Rashi even notes the difference. This isn't something that, like, I'm making up diktuk rules because no one knows diktuk anyway. Rashi notes the difference, and Rashi writes, ba'ayin yafa yoser yoser mimashin etztaveh. That he was more generous than what he was told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He put two hands. And that it's very touching, but it's also very troubling. You know, what was Moshe Rabbeinu thinking in adding to the Tzivoy Hashem? You know, where else did Moshe, you know, choose to just on his own go off and decide to add his own little knetch into what HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded? That's not, what he's supposed to do, other than the couple of places, Yashar Kochacha Sheshibarta and Hosef Yomechon Midaito, you know, a couple of places. But where do we, you know, why is he allowed to do that? You know, secondly, if you look at how the Rambam describes the transmission of Torah, there's another anomaly that totally jumps out at you. The Rambam, in his introduction to Mishnah Torah, when he traces the transmission of Torah, he says, V'af al pi shelo nichtuva Torah shebal peh, even though the Torah shebal peh was not written down, limdo Moshe Rabbeinu kula bebeis dino l'shivim zakenim, Moshe Rabbeinu taught it in its entirety to the shivim zakenim, ve'el-azar u'pinchas v'yoshua shloshtan kiblo mimoshe. And Elazar and Pinchas and Yehoshua, all three of them received it from Moshe. There were three Talmidim more than that are singled out above the Shivim Zakenim, who are identified as Elazar, Pinchas, and Yeshua, that were Kiblu Mimoshe, more than the Shivim Zakenim. They were actually Mekabel. Others heard the Torah, were able to repeat it. But these three, they were actually Mekabel. They were able to extrapolate from and expand on the Torah that they heard from Moshe. And he then writes, Uli Yoshua, Shaya Talmido Shel Moshe Rabbeinu. Yoshua, who was the Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu, he received the Masorah of the Torah Shebal Peh, and he passed on the Torah Shebal Peh to later generations, as Moshe had instructed him to pass it on to future generations. Only Yehoshua, though, the Rambam identifies in that line, is called Talmido Shel Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, why is that so? There's even a medrash that Yehoshua wasn't the sharpest Talmud in the Shir. So this formulation, it's especially difficult, because the Rambam had just said, just a couple lines earlier, he just said, Elazar, Pinchas, and Yehoshua, they were elevated above the Shem Zekanim. And then a couple lines later, oh, Yehoshua, Talmido Shel Moshe Rabbeinu. Yehoshua was the Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu. Why were these others not Talmidim? Why didn't they have the mitzvah to pass on Torah Shebal Peh to future generations, only Yeshua? And the third question, it's easy to pick on the Rambam, but it's a little bit unfair, because the problem really goes back to a Mishnah. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos tells us, Moshe kibel Torah miSinai, and the Mishnah says, Umasara Yehoshua, he gave it to Yehoshua. And Yehoshua gave it to the Zekanim, who gave it to the Nevi'im, even though Moshe really taught it to everybody. So why does Mishnah only say that he gave it to Yehoshua? So the answer to these questions lies in an almost opposite kind of source. A kind of source where Yehoshua is not emphasized, where Yehoshua is totally ignored. The Gemara about transmission of Torah is a Gemara Maseches Erevin. Talks about Ketzat Seder Mishnah. How is the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu received, how is it passed on to other people? And the sugya, it's the primary sugya, it talks about the psukim of Lo Beshamayimi, and it indicates that it's more about Torah. Lo Beshamayimi is more about Torah than it is about tshuva, even though around all the time you hear all the drushes about Lo Beshamayimi being about tshuva, but the Gemara says it's really about Torah. And it describes how Moshe summoned Aaron into the Ohel Moed, and he taught the Torah to Aaron, and then he put Aaron next to him, and he brought in Elazar v'Isamar, and he taught them, and then he put them next to him, and he brought in the Shivim Zekanim, and he then taught them the Torah, and then sat them next to him, and he brought in all of Klal Yisrael. And that way, Aaron heard it four times. When Klal Yisrael heard it the first time from Aaron, that was their fourth time of hearing it. When Elazar and Yisamar were, you know, at that point, Elazar and Yisamar were hearing it the third time, and the Shivim Zekanim were hearing it the second time. V'chule, right? So everyone gets to hear it four times, because as we know, in order to learn something, you need to learn it four times. Not even to chazer, just to learn it, to understand something, you need to learn it four times. So the Meiri points out, there is somebody missing in this description. Right, there's somebody big missing in this description. The Meiri points out, where in the world is Yehoshua? He was the only one spotlighted in Pirkei Avos. Moshe kibel Torah Sinai Masorah liYehoshua. Ketzad Seder Mishnah, says the Gemara, and Yehoshua is nowhere to be found. It's Moshe to Aaron to Elazar v'Isamar, Shivim Zekanim. Where on earth is Yehoshua? Doesn't even mention him as part of the Masorah of Torah Shebal Peh. So the Meiri says that Yehoshua didn't need to be stated. He didn't need to be stated. Because wherever Moshe was, Yehoshua was always there. Nar lo yomush mitocha ohel. You always want to know where to find Yehoshua? Look for Moshe, you'll find Yehoshua. You want to know where Moshe is? Look for Yehoshua, you'll find Moshe. It wasn't even necessary to mention him. It's obvious. Wherever Moshe was teaching, Yehoshua was there learning. Maybe Moshe had already given the Masorah to Yehoshua by the time he was transmitting it to Aaron and everybody else. You know, it reminds me, we were once in the OU office and a Shaila came up. And it was Rav Shechter was looking at an Igros Moshe, and he felt that he needed to understand the circumstances behind that tshuva that Rav Moshe wrote. Like, what was going on? What were the details of the Shaila? Rav Moshe didn't write out the Shailas in great detail. And Rav Shechter felt for this decision that he had to make for the OU, it was important to understand the circumstances. It's going back many years, and he said, call Rav David. So he said, what if we can't get a hold of Rav David? Should we call anybody? Just Rav David, only Rav David. We need to get a hold of Rav David. Meaning, and he explained, he said, the others that we had suggested, great Talmid HaChachamim, but wherever Rav Moshe was, Rav David was there. Rav David never left, he never learned in a different yeshiva, he stayed with Rav Moshe, he was there when every single one of these tshuvas were written, he was with Rav Moshe the entire time. And there's something about that, there's some level of shimush that he was able to pick up that nobody else could. He had learned from Rav Moshe in all the contexts. And Yehoshua learned from Moshe Rabbeinu in every different context, in formal contexts and informal contexts. And that's why he gained more than everybody else. The Gemara in Brachos says, Gadol Shimusha Yoser Milimuda. that a person can learn sometimes more from informal interactions, you know, from seeing hanhagos and seeing a way of being and a way of speaking and what, then they gain from formal interactions. Rav Shechter often points out that gadol shimushi yosem milimuda does not mean that you pick up the Rebbe's dry cleaning for him. It means that you see the Rebbe in a more informal context. You're able to pick up what are his hakpados, what are his chumras, what are his hanhagos, how does he deal with people. There's a lot to learn. I remember I once picked up Rav Shechter from the airport. There was a chat that we had of a number of the Talmidim, you know, whenever Rav Shechter needed a ride, so people would volunteer, and there was something I wanted to talk to him about, so I picked him up from the airport to bring him back to the Heights before going home that night, just so I could spend some time with him. He was coming back from Boca, I think, and when I was dropping him off, he said, "What are you doing? Why are you picking me up from the airport?" I said, "What do you mean? Shimush Tamil Chacham, you know, this is Kadosh Shimushi Yosem Ilimuta." And he said, "You know, that's not what it means. It doesn't mean picking me up from the airport. It means picking up on the Hanhagos. It means picking up. This is for the Talmidim." I said, "I beg your pardon. I think I'm a Talmid. You know, what he was saying was for the younger Talmidim to do. But be that as it may, Kadosh Shimushi Yosem Ilimuta is to pick up from those informal interactions. You can see how the Rebbe conducts himself, how he speaks in those settings. Only Yoshua became Talmido of Moshe Rabbeinu, because he didn't only learn in the formal shiurim with everyone else, he learned in every different context. Rav Soloveitchik gave a drasha in 1963 to the RCA, and he has a very similar piece in the end of Divrei Hashkafa, where he says that when learning from Rebbeim, you have to attempt to learn from these informal settings as well. And it teaches that there are two components to the Mesorah and to our relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. First, there's the intellectual component that you get from the shir, the lamdas, the kashas, the terutzim, the chakiros, the halachas, the nafkaminas, you know, all the things that we throw around in the Beis Medrash and that we, you know, that gets us going, that gets our blood flowing, that gets us excited. And second, there's the experiential component, to know what the Torah feels like, to know what it looks like. Not just knowing the Torah, but feeling the cadence and the neshama of the Torah. It's a major, major part of our Mesorah. Rav Soloveitchik sharpens the image even further, and he says that he has so much Torah that he has from his father and his grandfather in the halachos and the lamdas of Yom Noraim in particular. But he said, he reflects that on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, when he thinks about things, he's generally not thinking about any of that lamdas. He's thinking about, he's transported back to the time when he sat next to his father in shul and how his father davened and what that felt like. What it felt like to be davening next to his father. Two totally different dimensions to the relationship. It reminds me a little bit when they put out Rav Shechter on the Haggadah. So it has all of Rav Shechter, the Torah Rav Shechter loves to say every year leading up to Pesach. Dr. Weissman did an unbelievable job with that entire series, continues to do an unbelievable job with that entire series of catching Rav Shechter's voice in the shiur room, of exactly which pieces of Torah he loves to share, which pieces of Torah he thinks are the most important pieces of Torah to transmit to his Talmidim. But Rav Shai Shechter told me he never says any of this at the Seder, meaning these are the shiurim he gives in the classroom, but this isn't what the Seder is like. Meaning there's a totally different experience when you're sitting around the table. There's an entirely different experience. I was thinking of this this week when we were in Tannersville, when we were at Rav Shechter. So Rav Shechter said a shiur for a good amount of time. You know, I loved how after an hour of just like going and going and going, he said, "I think I took notes." And he takes out a note paper where he has like four words written down. "Oh yeah, I forgot to say." But he went for whatever it was, an hour and a half, hour, whatever it was. And then afterwards, when the barbecue was done, and people were eating, I was standing on the porch with the Rebbetzin, and I'm watching Rav Shechter with a hamburger in his hand, and guys like crowding around asking him questions. I'm like, where do you ever have a Gadol B'Yisrael, an 84-year-old Gadol B'Yisrael, who sits around, you know, with you know, you're all wonderful, but sits around with 18-year-olds, and just, you know, stam, schmoozing, shooting the breeze, you know, answering whatever questions that they have. It's a different type of shimush that you pick up on. It's a different type of experience. When you get to see, I can tell you, you know, when I go visit Rav Willig in Marash HaKollel, entirely different than when I see him in yeshiva. It's just in yeshiva, that's the yeshiva setting, it's the classroom. Sometimes you get to see a person, and this is like, it's such an advantage of what summer has to offer. When Rav Moshe Weinberger comes and he's just schmoozes on the porch, it's different than when you go to Eish Kodesh and you hear a shir. It's just different. It's an entirely different experience. You pick something else up that you wouldn't otherwise get. In a different context, in this hesped for the Tolna Rebbetzin, which was later printed in the Tradition Journal, Rav Soloveitchik attributes this dichotomy to the pasuk in Mishlei, Shema b'ni musar avicha, va'al titosh toras imecha. What are these two dimensions? Musar avicha and toras imecha. And he draws on how he learned from his father the halachos of Kiddush, and the conceptual underpinnings of the Lamtes Malachos, and all of the myriad details of Hilchos Shabbos. He picked up all the intellectual. He said from his mother, he learned what Shabbos tastes like, what Shabbos feels like, the experiential, the spiritual side of Shabbos. Rav Soloveitchik said that as a Rebbe, he lamented that he feels he was successful in imparting the intellectual Masorah, but that the experiential component, he laments, he wasn't as successful in passing on to the next generation. In his estimation, his Talmidim know what to do, but don't necessarily know how to feel. I would bet that if you would track, I don't know this, I can't, maybe I shouldn't say it even, but if you would track the Talmidim who went with him to Boston in the summertime to learn with him in the summertime, I would bet that they picked up more of that component than the Talmidim only had him in yeshiva. It's different. So going back to our questions, Rav Soloveitchik understands that the unique aspect of Moshe's passing on the torch to Yoshua is highlighted in Parshas Pinchas, because Moshe Rabbeinu was told, "V'samachta es yadcha alav," put your hand, single hand, on him, and then "Vayismoch yadov alav," he put both hands on Yoshua. He was told to put one hand, he puts two hands, and the Torah says he had done kasher dibar Hashem beyond Moshe, that he did exactly what Hashem says. So, okay, Rashi says it was ba'in yafa, but it's hard to say that going beyond what Hashem told you to do is best described as kasher dibar Hashem. Hashem commanded him to use one hand. That's not kasher dibar Hashem. When you go one step further than what Hashem wanted, you're doing different than what Hashem wanted. That's what Rav Shechter told us in Tannersville the other day, that you take the A train to YU and you take it just one step further. You're not deeper into YU, right? I mean, that's not the way it works. When you go one step further, you're in an entirely different place. You're somewhere. What does that even mean? So Rav Soloveitchik explained that I skipped a pasuk. He says in the interim, after Hashem instructed in pasuk Yidchas, v'samachta yadcha alav, and before Moshe Rabbeinu actually was samach yadav in pasuk Chav Gimel, there was an additional instruction that Hashem gave in pasuk Chav. Moshe Rabbeinu was told, v'nasata meholdcha alav, put your majesty on him. A separate command to transmit from Moshe to Yeshua to give him something else. So why did he need two hands? Apparently, it's symbolic of two dimensions that were being passed on from Moshe Rabbeinu to Yeshua, the intellectual Masorah, as well as the experiential Masorah. Now, last summer, I read the biography of Rav Avigdor Miller, a very worthwhile, educational, enlightening, fascinating read. Rav Avigdor Miller was my grandfather's rabbi, so I had a lot of... It was soon after my grandfather passed away, so it was a way of connecting to someone that had a tremendous influence in my grandfather's life, and by extension, in my whole family. So there was a particular passage that really caught my eye. I may have mentioned it earlier this summer. It said that when he was learning in Slobodka, Rav Miller used to walk with his Rebbe, Rav Isaac Sher. He used to take walks with him. So one time, Rav Sher and Rav Miller encountered a herd of sheep. And that's the kind of thing you don't really, when you walk around Washington Heights, you see a lot of interesting things, but not a herd of sheep. And Rav Sher pointed to the herd of sheep and he said, "What do you see?" And Rav Miller said, "I see a herd of sheep." So Rav Sher said to him, "This herd of sheep that you're seeing is a manifestation of Hashem as the Malbish Arumim, because the wool that they produce is the source of our begadim." And then they continued to walk, and Rav Isaac Sher asked him, "You ever notice the buttonholes on your jacket?" And Rav Miller said, "Yeah, that's how I button my jacket." And Rav Isaac asked if he noticed that around the buttonholes on your jacket, there's a thick border of thread around the buttonhole. And Rav Miller said, "Okay, yeah, I see that." He said, isn't that, imagine what would become of the hole, of the buttonhole, if there was no thick border of thread around it. It would rip and the garment would be ruined, right? It would last for a short time and then it would rip right through. That human ingenuity to preserve our begadim was also a manifestation of Malbish Arumin, Rav Sher told Rav Miller. So Rav Miller told Rav Sher's grandson over 60 years later that ever since that day, whenever he made the bracha of Malbish Arumin, he would just rub his fingers over the buttonhole on his jacket and remind himself of the depth of Malbish Arumin. Not a bad hanhaga, it's an easy if you wear a jacket, it's an easy hanhaga to do, or at least think of it. And he didn't, can you imagine how impressed Rav Sher would have been with the custom suits with the colorful buttonholes? I don't know. Mr. Stomach would have been even more impressed. But I think that, as we're getting closer to the end of our time here in Camp Keli, which, by the way, we're not at the end of our time here in Camp Keli. We still have a few days left. But as we're getting closer to the end of our time in Camp Keli, I think part of what we should think of, what we gained, so what did we gain exactly? That you heard shiurim, you hear shiurim from better Magidei Shir throughout the year, and you're able to pick up a lot from amazing Rebbeim and Talmidei Chacham all the time. But to be able to sort of like live 24/7 and in an environment where there are Talmidei Chachamim around you, and to be able to live in an environment where you're able to experience, whether you visit them or they visit you, Talmidei Chacham in just like a more relaxed setting, in a more relaxed atmosphere, in a place where they just open up, maybe just a little bit more, where they're you see a little bit more of the inside of like what they're, what drives them, where you think of the Gedolei Torah that have walked through either here or we've walked through their places over the past 3.5 weeks. I mean, it's unbelievable. I'm overwhelmed when I think about the list of people. Just like yesterday, it was supposed to be a nothing day, really. And all of a sudden, Rav Neuberger's here, and Rav Moshe Weinberger's here. Like, just unbelievable what we've been able to experience, what we've been able to have. There's a certain cadence of Torah that, I'm not a huge fan of long Bein HaZmanim, and I don't know where it came from. It's irrelevant when it comes from secular places, the idea that we have a 2.5 month summer vacation. That's not generally good for Talmud Torah, but it provides an opportunity, right? It provides an opportunity, because you put Talmidei Chacham in different settings, and they're just more accessible. They're more accessible. You're able to pick up certain things. So we should realize that that's a critical part of the Mesoras HaTorah. Yeshua is the hero of the story. He may not have been the brightest Talmud in the Shir, but he was the one that carried the torch, because he was able to pick up on what Rav Soloveitchik, the greatest teacher of his generation, what he felt in his own self-assessment he was unable to give to his Talmidim. That we're able to be those Talmidim that are able to pick up on it. So we should just appreciate what we've had, and we should, going forward, when we have Rebbeim, try to look for those contexts to be able to pick up from them, to be able to grab on to that, not only Musar Avicha, but also that Torah Simecha.